I'm right on the cutting edge there, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien.
Hey, good to see you.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
Apparently, we're having an elevator problem this morning.
Apparently. You get some new security measures here.
It's so funny. I was telling Robbie that I want to make sure that, you know, as we begin this sort of new chapter here on Twin Cities News Talk, and that we let the guests know, you know, I come here in plenty of time to get them in studio and get them settled before the segment starts, just because, you know, a lot of times people are coming in while we're live on the air. And, of course, my first attempt at that, we have an elevator that's not cooperating, so.
It's all good. We figured it out.
Good to see you yesterday at Utapil's, Utapil's Brewing and the celebration of Drew. We're going to be recording a post-show podcast today where we'll get into a lot of what's taken place in the past 3 weeks, and I've got a lot of things to say on my end, and I haven't even gotten into on the air sort of how everything happened in my world in the middle of going through the open heart surgery and the recovery, and when I found out, and I've got my own stories to tell. So we'll do a post show podcast today, and Robbie and myself, and we'll dive into all that. And some people were asking too, how can they access that? For those that don't, it's available on the normal Twin Cities News Talk podcast feed. So where you would go and grab the 3 hours of the show, it'll also be placed right in there with it. So I hope those will you will go and check that out if you're interested in doing so. But again, it's great seeing you yesterday.
You did a great job yesterday. Really, your remarks were very appropriate. I know you guys had a long relationship, and everything you've done, John, as you've been recovering to kind of pull things back together, hold things together, it's been outstanding. I know it's helped a lot of folks, including myself.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because it was funny. And again, we'll get into more of this later on, but when I was done speaking yesterday, I just even then I didn't feel like I did service, you know, to speaking about Drew. So it's been reassuring and comforting. It's not about me at all, and I was making sure that it wasn't about that, because I tend to do that, Jeff O'Brien. I tend to make things about me. I tried to make sure that I didn't do that yesterday. So thank you for those comments. I appreciate it. All right, we got a couple of things to talk to you about.
Yeah.
We just had Rob Dorian from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. They had weighed in on their website, and I guess we can kind of start here. The Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus had weighed in on their website whether or not these new edible rules when it comes to THC had any impact on Second Amendment rights and gun ownership. And straightforward on the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus website, they said, no, it doesn't.
Right, correct.
So did you have any further comments on that particular aspect of it before we get into the seltzers? And
no, there's just, I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding, misinformation out there about what exactly the legislature did, or what's being sold. It's the when you talk about THC edibles, they didn't legalize, you know, cannabis, adult, you know, kind of recreational cannabis for edibles only. It's the products that are, it's the THC derived from hemp, the 0.3% that, you know, Delta 8 and Delta 9 that is been descheduled from the Controlled Substances Act under the 2018 Farm Bill. So there's nothing really groundbreaking. They passed a law that clarified some ambiguities, because some of these breweries and distilleries were coming up with a CBD infused seltzer, non-alcoholic seltzer. These all have to be non-alcoholic, and the reason is because the regulatory agency at the federal level will not give a formula approval to an alcoholic beverage that includes CBD or THC. They have guidelines as to which parts of the hemp plant are allowed to be used in an alcoholic beverage. So you'll see a toasted hemp seed ale, that's okay, but CBD infused anything is not going to get a formal approval from the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax and Trade Bureau.
Now, you had mentioned it before, it was deregulated via 2018, and we know some of these Delta 8 and Delta 9, right?
Yep.
Those were available. I know I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I know we had, you know, Josh Hassing on before on the show many times from the vaping studio. We had talked about this. The new law that went into effect did have an impact on the percentage amounts of that that can be included into products and sold. Am I getting that correct?
So the restrictions they have you're correct, John, it's 5 milligrams per serving, 50 milligrams per package. is the, and it has, and it has to be 21 or older and have some way of a childproof seal on it. That's, and this was a big fight. You know, there was the, that, if you remember, there was the court case that interpreted the exemption as only applying to dry products, not liquid products. That was part of what was the legislative fix was originally intended to do, was do that. And then they went a little bit further. I'm on the board of the Minnesota Industrial Hemp Association. Wisconsin has a program like this where, you know, breweries can put CBD in sparkling water, other non-alcoholic beverages. So we wanted that, and we there was a push. The, you know, the State Board of Pharmacy wants to regulate Delta 8 and Delta 9. The medical cannabis people want sole custody of being able to sell Delta 8 and Delta 9, and somehow we ended up with a little bit of, you know, there's guidelines in terms of serving size and what can be sold, but beyond that, it's there's no license required to sell it or anything like that right now. So time will tell if there's additional regulation. My advice to people who are going to make products or who are going to consume products is don't do dumb things to give them an excuse to regulate this more.
Okay.
You know?
Now, given talking with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien here on Twin Cities News Talk, and given your association with some of the groups involved in this, are you in a position to give opinion? Should I ask? Because I have a question.
Well, I've been giving opinions to clients. I spent all of, I think when I reached out to you on Friday, I spent all of Thursday back to back calls on with clients, telling them what exactly the law said and what they can do.
Do you think we're better now with the changes, or are we better the way that it was based off of when it happened in 2018? Which way? Because I know, I don't want to speak out of turn, but my understanding was with the products coming from places like the vaping studio, they were going to have to go and revamp a lot of their formulas based off of these new regulations. And, mm-hmm. and it seems as if the public was doing, you know, their own due diligence in purchasing these products, and the suppliers were doing their due diligence in explaining the percentage amounts and the impact that it could have on them. So I'm curious where you land on whether or not this new regulation is better than the way it was previous when these items were being sold.
Well, it's a good question, John. I would say that the intervening step here was this Court of Appeals decision, the State versus Loveless, that prompted some legislative action. I think under the original 2018 rules, I think it was kind of assumed that you could do some of these things. You know, particularly with the CBD in some of the, you know, in seltzers and things like that. It was the attitude of, was nobody is saying we can't do it, so we're going to do it. In the wake of that court case, a lot of breweries started receiving cease and desist letters from the Department of Health.
Okay.
Saying, you can't do this. Okay. And that's what they were flying below the radar. So in that sense, it's better now because there's at least a statute that says you can do this. Here's the restriction. So in that sense, it did help kind of those businesses understand what exactly they can do.
We're going to be getting into Elon Musk and the broken buyout of Twitter coming up. We do have a few more items. I do have a few more items I want to get to you on this particular issue of the THC laws, including some commentary from the Star Tribune editorial board. They made a comment here, and we'll set this up and talk about it more here in a moment with lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. But they said businesses usually push for less oversight, yet this week an Indeed Brewing, right, Metro, mm-hmm. Mecca mm-hmm. for beer, said in a news release that the brewery's efforts to make a THC seltzer are complicated by not having much regulation to work off of. So let's get into this in the commentary from the editorial board of the Star Tribune. More with you coming up, Jeff O'Brien. Want to hear from you as well, 651-989-5855. And if you're listening on the iHeartRadio app, use the TalkBack feature and leave us a message. We'll play those coming back next.
Question regarding THC with these new edibles. I assume that it doesn't matter what the source is of THC when it comes to a blood test or a drug test in regards to commercial driver's license, stuff like that. Thank you.
Well, I will leave the answer to that question here on Twin Cities News Talk. My name is John Justice, too, lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien, who joins us in studio talking about this very issue. So, Jeff O'Brien.
Yeah, so it's a good question. Again, it's THC that's derived from hemp, and there is a limit you have to have. It's 0.3% THC. So the Delta 8 and Delta 9 products, you will get a high off of them compared to, say, CBD. But my understanding is that it's not the same potency of a high that you would get if you were, say, taking, you know, cannabis from the, you know, getting the THC. It's a much lower concentration. So that's going to be one of the things, like, in, you know, as we look forward, you know, that's the question that comes up all the time about testing for it. But it, when it comes to, you know, providing these products, that's why there's limits as to how much you can sell to somebody at any particular time. And so there are some measures in place to keep that, because, yes, in theory, you could consume a lot of this and get a similar high. But this 5 milligram per serving, 50 milligram per package is exactly designed to this law was passed in consultation with the State Board of Pharmacy. There were hearings on it. These levels were decided upon from a perspective of, we don't want to have people running around, you know, consuming so much of this that they are essentially equivalent to smoking cannabis.
Sure. Well, and I think pointing out the per serving aspect of it, I think that's the key. There's a lot of different variables involved. It's my understanding of Delta 8 as well. It has less of a psychotropic impact on you, but of course you could consume more to increase that. That, mm-hmm. of course, is also going to weigh into, are you eating things with it? You know, your own metabolism and things like that. But that's the case when it comes to alcohol in general. But I think the key is what you just honed in on, and that is the serving amount as it relates to this particular product.
Correct.
Let's dive back over to what the editorial board had to say. Talking about Indeed Brewing, customers can expect a new non-alcoholic choice, still capable of delivering a bit of a buzz with a THC in it. Indeed did release put out a news release. Saying that the THC seltzers are complicated by not having much regulation to work off of. The editorial board weighed in and said the state needs a more robust regulatory framework to protect consumers and guide businesses. The 2022 measure is just a starting point and really a reality underscored by the continuing commotion over whether Minnesota lawmakers realized that they had legalized edibles or not. What are your thoughts on the Star Tribune's take here? And Indeed saying it's complicated and not having much regulation to work off of.
I agree with them to some extent. You know, when anything you're dealing with alcohol regulation, you know, the way that the laws are interpreted has generally been, if the statute doesn't say you can do it, it means you can't do it. And that's how alcohol and gambling enforcement operates here in Minnesota. So there have been some questions that have been posed to AGED about some of these issues, particularly, you know, one of the other issues is, can a bar use water soluble CBD or Delta 8 as a mixer like tonic water?
Sure.
Right. And there's some question right now as to which state agency or board is exactly in charge of enforcement. You know, there's some, you know, you'd think with alcoholic beverages, it'd be alcohol and gambling enforcement. If it was, you know, some other, they'll say we defer to the Department of Health. Others say the Board of Pharmacy. So there may, I wouldn't be surprised, John, if there's additional regulation or additional rules that come out as to who exactly is enforcing these provisions. But like I said earlier, to those that make it, those that want to consume it, you know, be smart about it. Don't give them a reason to go back in and roll things back.
How much of this that we're dealing with the regulations that we're faced with, the conversation that we're having about these edibles and seltzers, how big of a step forward do you think all of this is to legalization fully of marijuana here in the state?
It's a good question. I don't know how much of a step forward it is. I think there's some things in play in other states that could have a bigger impact. You know, the South Dakota ballot measure, where they're going to, you know, the last time they put both medical and adult use on the ballot, it was struck down by their Supreme Court saying it was two issues, not one single issue like their rules are. The medical was passed. Adult use is going back on the ballot. They survived a challenge to make it harder to get a ballot question on. So I that very well could get through this fall. The other one that's going on, you know, and to what Rob was talking about with the Second Amendment issue, of all things, the Democrat Attorney General in Florida, Nikki Fried, sued the Biden administration, took a lot of flack from it from people that, you know, because she's also running to run against Ron DeSantis, sued the Biden administration to have that rule overturned on say you're violating the Second Amendment rights of medical cannabis patients by having that rule in place. So there, and I've talked privately to some Republican legislators, who that's their biggest concern is the Second Amendment issue. We don't want this used to take away somebody's guns. So if you can resolve that issue at the federal level, if you could, and if surrounding states start doing something, then we're going to have the same issue we have with alcohol.
Yeah.
Right? Businesses are going to go someplace else because Minnesota's more restrictive. So it definitely might move the ball forward a little bit depending on how things play out. But there's a lot of moving parts on that right now.
All right. In the time we have left, Laura Extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien here on Twin Cities News Talk. Let's get to Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Elon Musk responded to the latest major development in his ongoing feud with Twitter early on Monday morning, tweeting out a meme of him laughing after Twitter reportedly lawyered up to sue him for moving to drop his $44 billion takeover of the company. The post has a series of four photos of the Tesla founder laughing with captions that read, "They said I couldn't buy Twitter. They wouldn't disclose bot info. Now they want to force me to buy Twitter in court. Now they have to disclose bot info in court."
Mm-hmm.
Interesting note from Daily Wire on this, and then I'll hand it over to you. Three magic words loom, according to Daily Wire, over Elon Musk's bid to scuttle the $44 million buyout of Twitter. This is according to Bloomberg. Material adverse effect was cited by Tesla's chief attorneys in the Securities and Exchange Commission filing on Friday, invoking the phrase they say means that Musk believes Twitter did not act in good faith during the due diligence period and their actions negatively affected his ability to fairly gauge his own position. So yep. With that, now this is in your wheelhouse, mm-hmm. So I want to hand it over to you and get your thoughts on this deal sort of going south and where everything stands at the moment.
Well, what I would say to folks that are watching this play out is it's not over until it's over. We frequently have deals that go off the rails in the process. You know, the typical process is, you know, the parties have some sort of a preliminary agreement, and then they sign a contract, and the contract usually provides for a period of time where the buyers, or in this case it's a merger, but they allowed to do some due diligence on the company or what the target. And at that point, if there's issues that arise, they can deal with them, renegotiate them, or have the right to cancel the deal. There's representations and warranties in these agreements that have to be adhered to. And if they're later found to be false or, you know, breached, there's consequences for that. And, sometimes this is what happens. We end up with deals that go sideways, end up with, you know, lawsuits. And at the end of the day, there's some settlement of the lawsuit that as to how things are going to play out. It's interesting that all the talk from Twitter's side and the legal team has been about suing for specific performance. That's a specific remedy forcing the party to go forward with the deal. And basically forcing Elon Musk to buy Twitter.
Even though they were all upset when he was going to do it in the first place.
Exactly. Plus, there is, I understand in the agreement, there's a $1 billion breakup fee. What a breakup fee is in the event that that he elects not to go forward with it, he owes them $1 billion. I haven't heard talk from them of suing for the breakup fee and going back to business as usual at Twitter. They're trying to force him to go forward with the deal. Now, what his point is, and the significance of this information on the bot accounts is, you know, he's buying it because he believes there's a certain value in terms of its influence as an advertising tool, as a marketing tool. If there's a larger than anticipated number of basically fake accounts.
Right.
It doesn't have the reach and the impact and the influence that everyone thought it did.
Right.
And as a result, it's not worth $44 billion.
Right.
Right? And so, you know, to his point, yeah, if the issue is that they haven't provided accurate information or full information about these the percentage of bot accounts, if they sue him, now in discovery, in court, his lawyers can make discovery requests and ask Twitter to provide that data.
So do you think it was intentional on that front, where Twitter was not giving him the information he needed? He backed out, knowing they would countersue, knowing that they would have to go and reveal that in court? I mean, I would think that Twitter would be aware that I'm using just Twitter, but I would imagine the powers that be at Twitter would be aware that that would be the case. Do you think this was intentional on Elon Musk's part?
I do. I think at the end of the day, you know, we bring litigation. It's not just because we want to sue people. We want a result, right? I think his intended result here is to buy Twitter at a much lower price than $44 billion. Mm. And this is part of the process of getting there, is because these cases end up, they could end up in mediation or some other, you know, the dispute resolution process as part of the court process. It's very possible they could reach a settlement where he buys this for far less than what he originally intended to pay for it. And as I understand, as soon as this letter was filed with the SEC, like the next day, the stock price started dropping.
Yeah.
So, to your point earlier in the show, John, I think this hurts Twitter more than it hurts Elon Musk.
Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree. Especially if we're going to start exposing Twitter for not being, there's no doubt that Twitter wields influence. It's just not as powerful as I think a lot of people say that it is. And it's something that we've talked about quite a bit on this show, especially when you begin to break down the demographics of who actually uses Twitter. And even when you break it out even further into politics, because you may not realize this, listen to a show like this. However, the vast majority of what is on Twitter and people use Twitter for is not politically related for the most part, even though that gains quite a bit of attention.
Right.
Overall.
Right. I use Twitter to follow Twins games. That's what I mean. My number one use of Twitter.
Right.
Yeah. You know, politics. Yeah. Well, you know, that's nice. But, you know, how are the Twins doing in the fifth inning?
I used Twitter yesterday to find out that my driver wrecked out of the race early. That was being recorded as I headed back from the celebration of Drew yesterday. Laurie Extraordinaire, Jeff O'Brien.
Thanks, John.
Thank you so much for coming in this morning. Fantastic insight. And of course, we'll get you on again real soon.
Sounds good.